Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The Evil Horned Cherub. This is a story about an encounter I had at age 9 that still haunts me. I was sleeping in bed while my parents were outside on the stairs of our building. I awoke for some strange reason, and when I looked to the side of my bed at the floor, I saw something semi-transparent, red, rising up through the floor. Now, I have to state that my room had no windows, so my room was pitch black. I was in shock. I couldn't move. All I could do was stare in total fright. When the creature's body fully came up from the floor, it was walking back and forth on the floor, but its steps weren't solid. It would bounce like a balloon each step it took. The creature was about 2 feet tall, its body round like a cherub, and it had small horns on either sides of its head. He continued pacing back and forth. It's strange, 'cause he wouldn't look at me directly the whole time, thank God. I would have died of fright had he done so. This continued a while longer, and then he suddenly disappeared, and then I started to hear banging on the walls of my room. It was like a giant was banging. That's how loud it got. All I could do was hide and pray it would go away under my bed covers. After a few minutes, it did stop, and in my heart, I knew it wasn't a prank or my imagination. See, my aunt had just bought the apartment building, and the only ones living there was my family on the fourth floor and my aunt on the first. The rest of the apartments were being fixed for new renters. Besides, my family is very conservative, and playing pranks is considered childish. The creature, for 7 years, would not let me forget him so easily. I would have 5 or 6 repetitive dreams with the creature, as well as experience levitation. I would be just about to fall asleep, and I would feel my body floating. Upon that realization, I'd totally awaken and come crashing down on the bed. I stopped having dreams and levitating at about age 16. I think it was because my aunt died that year, and she's protecting me. I dream with her constantly. I feel her presence sometimes. I'm grateful for her love and protection. And to this day, I just don't understand. I just don't know what that creature was. Where is the baby? My mother's mom died when she was 5 years old, so my great-grandmother raised her and her brothers and sisters. One day, as she was sewing in her bedroom, she said she felt someone come into the room. She looked up and saw her daughter, my mom's mother, standing at the doorway staring at her. Before my great-grandmother could do anything, the ghostly visitor said, "Where is the baby?" My great-grandmother said, "She's playing in the backyard." As soon as she replied, the ghost vanished. Shaken and thinking she was seeing things, she thought she would go wash some dishes and get her mind off of what had just happened. She had been washing dishes for about 5 minutes when she felt someone enter into the room. She turned to see her daughter back again. As soon as their eyes met, her daughter once again said, "Where is the baby?" Thinking something was wrong and scared to death, my great-grandmother went to the backyard to check on the baby. When she got there, she found the yard empty and the gate opened. She went looking for my mother and saw her walking towards the busy street near their house. She was able to catch her just before she walked out into the street. Years later, I was home visiting my mother. As I walked past the front room toward the kitchen to see my mother, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a woman sitting in the front room. She had shoulder-length, light-colored hair and was wearing a black dress. I thought it was my sister-in-law, so I went on into the kitchen. I talked to my mother a few minutes and then asked why Tony was sitting in the front room all by herself. My mother looked at me funny and told me that Tony was at work. I told her she was nuts and went to the front room to get her. When I got there, I found no one. Thinking she may have gone upstairs, I searched for her and found no one. I told my mother that I really did see somebody sitting in there. She asked, "What did she look like?" I told her. She said, "Oh, that was my mother. Before she died, she told me she would always be near me." I don't know if I saw her mother or not, but I do know I saw someone, and then they were gone. I really did see them. I know I did. My mom has since told me other stories of when her mother was around, and I have no doubt that Grandma is there taking care of all of us. A skeptic story. I believed in ghosts for as long as I can remember. I'm not sure why. I've never seen a ghost or had a major experience with any. I'm an exception in my family. My mom thinks that the subject is fascinating, but she really doesn't believe in them. My sisters have flat-out ridiculed me for my belief in the supernatural. Funny thing is, all three of these skeptics have dealt with ghostly situations. One evening, I was home alone with my sister Jamie. I was taking a nap in my room, and she walked in to get something out of my closet. When she walked out, she left the light on and the closet door open. I hate having my closet door open. I yelled at her, half asleep, to come back and turn the light out and shut the door. The light went out and I said, "Thank you." She yelled back, "For what? I didn't turn your light out." I was like, "Yeah, whatever." She insisted that she never touched it. She said she got halfway down the hall when the light went out. Since I was mostly asleep when this happened, I thought I was dreaming. But she reminded me when I woke up. My sister Jenny was in my room once after I moved out, and she saw a small cloud out of the corner of her eye. She looked at it thinking my mom was burning incense in there, but there was no fire or source of smoke. It started to grow into a full-length apparition. She freaked out and ran out of the room. I don't think she's seen anything since then. This is the best story. It was shortly before Halloween, and I had some Christmas lights hanging up in my room. They had burnt out, and I hadn't taken them down yet. I remember I had them unplugged. One morning, I got up really early for school, and nobody else was up yet. I went to get breakfast, and when I came back to my room, the lights were plugged in, and they were working. I thought that was really strange, but it gets better. That same day, I was on the phone with a friend all evening. It was really cold outside. Suddenly, my mom comes into my room looking freaked out. She asked, "You weren't just outside, were you?" I said, "Hell no, it's freezing out there. Why?" She told me that she had been in the kitchen doing dishes when she heard a knock on the back door. She turned around and saw me looking at her through the window of the door. She thought it was weird for me to be out there because it was cold, and she didn't think I was out there in the first place. She went to the door to let me in, and suddenly, I wasn't there. She walked around outside looking for me, but there was no sign of anyone having been there. Mom swears to this day that it was me who she saw out there. You have to understand that there was nobody in my neighborhood that even remotely resembled me. But there I was, smiling at her. She doesn't know what to think of it. She's still skeptical about ghosts and stuff. We had a theory that it was my doppelganger because later that year she sent me on an errand in which I was almost killed. It wasn't just an accident, though. I just happened to not be driving my Fiat, which would have been smashed like a sardine can in the accident I was in. And I just happened to put on my seatbelt, which I never wore, at the last minute. The police said that had I not been wearing it, I would have been killed. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's the only thing that I've managed to come up with. Seeley story. I was an art major, and we didn't have a professor in our drawing class one day. Instead of leaving, most of us stayed so we could get caught up on our projects. Somehow, we got to talking about ghosts, and people who normally don't talk to anyone else were telling their stories. The best one was from a girl we called Seeley. She was from somewhere in the Far East, and no one could pronounce her actual name. She was living in a dorm once that is already legendary on campus for being haunted. One evening, Seeley laid on her bed resting while her roommate stood at the door talking to someone in the hallway. Suddenly, Seeley felt paralyzed. An apparition of a girl with blonde hair had come up head first from under her bed. When she demonstrated for us how the figure came up, it gave me major chills. The girl hovered there and said most angrily, "You need to go home now." The ghost also called her by her full name, which was strange because, like I said, no one knew how to pronounce it. Seeley couldn't move or scream for her roommate's attention until the ghost disappeared. Another story came from my friend Lena, who lived in another dorm. One evening, she and her roommates were out driving on the highway when they passed by a house with a barn out in back. There was nothing seemingly special about the house, but they found themselves drawn to it, especially the barn. They circled around and drove by the house twice more. The third time, they felt that something had left the barn and entered a car. They blew it off until things started happening in their dorm. Just regular haunting stuff like things disappearing and feeling someone sit on the bed when there's no one there. At first, the ghost seemed friendly, and it even followed them when they went home on weekends. Then one time, one of them was in the bathroom alone. She felt someone watching her, so she looked under the stalls and in the showers. There was no one there. She was brushing her teeth, and when she looked into the mirror, she noticed two eyes peeping at her through a shower curtain. But when she turned around, there was still nobody there. Pretty soon, they decided to pack up and get the hell out of Dodge. As they were walking down the stairs to go stay at a friend's house, something pushed them just enough to make them stumble. When they turned around, of course, there wasn't anybody there. As to who the ghost or ghosts were, well, that remained a mystery as well. Our haunted house. When I was a child, about 9, my sister was 5, we lived in a small, older home in Omaha. I believe they are called cement slab houses because they do not have a basement, just a cement slab as a foundation. This house had the strangest layout I had ever seen. As you walked in through the one and only door to the house, you entered the kitchen. It was very large in a small hallway with bathroom off to the left, a little further down the hallway, and there was a laundry room. At the end of this hallway was a staircase leading up to the second floor. At the top of the stairs was a bedroom, then a living room, family room, another bedroom, and a sun porch. My grandpa had the first bedroom at the top of the stairs, and then my parents had the second bedroom after the living room. My sister and I shared the sun porch. My mom and grandpa have fixed it up as the perfect bedroom for little girls with curtains and heat vents, all frilly and cute. One evening, my sister and I were on the main floor ready for bed. We had been up late that night for some reason, needed to get our teeth brushed and pajamas on to get to bed. It was about 11 p.m. I was waiting for my sister to finish in the bathroom. As she was the youngest, I let her go first. She had the door slightly ajar, and I was sitting on a small step that led up from the kitchen to the hallway right outside the bathroom door. All of a sudden, I heard my sister scream. I looked over at the bathroom door and noticed that the lights had gone out. I ran into the bathroom, and there on the window curtain was a man's face with longer, light brown hair, a beard, and a mustache. There was a bright red velvet cloth around his shoulders and a tremendous bright glow around his whole face and shoulders. The entire room seemed to illuminate that glow. My sister inched beside me. We were, of course, staring at the whatever it was. It said, "Do not turn on the lights. I will not hurt you." "Yeah, right." I turned on the lights as quick as I could, and it was gone. I spent the next 10 to 20 minutes trying to convince my sister that it was all a joke, all our imagination, and we should just go to bed. I was shaking inside worse than I can remember, even to this point in my life. We went to bed. I, of course, was wide awake for what seemed like forever. All at once, around 1 a.m., my dad jumped up, and all of us heard a tremendous racket on the second floor, which we were on. All of the doors were opening and slamming shut. The television was turning itself on and off repeatedly. All of the lights were turning themselves off and on. We all ran into the living room. We had a small bed on wheels that folded in two for easy storage. It was in a closet in the living room. My mom grabbed my sister in my hand and started to run for the doorway that would lead to the stairs and then out. The bed on wheels zoomed across the floor and blocked the doorway. My mom was pulling on the bed from one side, and my grandpa was pushing from the other. The bed wouldn't budge. I'm not sure what my dad was doing at the time, but he ran up and started pulling on the bed also. It would not move. My sister had silent tears streaming down her cheek. All of a sudden, everything just stopped. We all went into the kitchen on the main floor. Calmed down, my dad tried to recite some logical answer for what had just occurred. There was none. About half an hour later, we all went back to bed, hoping to salvage some rest. I remember looking at the clock. It was 1:45 a.m. I must have dozed off because I had woken up again and saw that the clocks showed it was 3 a.m. The main floor was now making a terrible racket. It sounded like the house was going to crash down around us. My dad and grandpa ran to the stairs and went down to about the fourth stair from the bottom. I was supposed to stay put again. Yeah, right. I had hold of the back of my grandpa's robe. Again on this floor, the lights were going on and off. Faucets in the kitchen and bathroom on and off. Doors opening and closing. We had a gas stove in the kitchen, and the burners were even igniting, then turning off over and over again. I honestly don't know how long this lasted. It all stopped, leaving the front door open. My parents and grandpa grabbed my sister and my hand and ran outside. We were outside for about 45 minutes or so when my parents decided it was their house and nobody or nothing was going to chase them from it. We all went back in. My sister slept with my parents. I slept with my grandpa. There were many, many other incidents in this house. We moved about 6 months after this first night I have described. I have driven by this house many times since. I've had my own family. It is still there. I know for a fact it has changed owners and renters numerous times. At the top of the hill from the house, which leads to a dead end, there was a small, very small but long church. It was torn down about 20 years ago. It was rumored that this church had been used as a satanic church with rituals and sacrifices. I'm not sure who, what, or why it was torn down. It has never had a sign with a name anywhere near the church so that I could investigate further, and I am not sure I would if I could. These events seem to open up some type of door because, well, let's just say there have been strange things happening to me my entire life. Of course, not every day, but just enough so that I can never forget what happened to us on that terrible night. Something that could never be explained. I don't know where to begin with this story. It all started after me and my roommate stopped being friends and I bought my first house. It was built in 1954 and was abandoned from 1979 until about 1991. I fell in love with the house the moment I saw it. It was small and had such a lovely feel to it. I suppose the first thing I noticed, which was odd, was that within a few days, there was a complete lack of animal life in the yard. I never saw nor heard a single bird or squirrel. It had an eerie silence to the place. In my first week of living there, I remembered that a can of soup had mysteriously made its way from the kitchen cabinet to behind my pillow. I hadn't had any guests in the house, and I could see no reason for me having put it there. After that, about a week later, I was sound asleep, and around 2:30 a.m., my doorbell rang 4 times. Very loud, distinct rings. I got up and went to the front door, but no one was there. Still half asleep, I cursed the kids next door, thinking they were playing tricks on me. However, before I went back, I glanced at the doorbell. To my surprise, the button was completely missing and the whole mechanism looked broken. I tried to ring the bell, but with no luck. This sent a wave of fear up my spine, and I slept with the light on for 2 nights afterwards. After living in the house for several months, with few weird happenings here and there, I decided to invite over a lifelong friend of mine. I'll call him Gary. Gary has never expressed any interest in the paranormal. We have known each other since we were 10. It just wasn't something that interested him. Before going to my new home, Gary and I had gone out to lunch. His personality was normal as well as his color. I noticed almost right away his attitude changed after we were in the house, as well as his color began to look pale. He started getting easily aggravated about little things and started swearing frequently. He was like a whole different person. At about 8:30, Gary just stood up and walked into the guest bedroom and went to sleep. He didn't even say anything. He just left. I shrugged it off and went to bed myself shortly afterwards. At about 1:10 a.m., I woke up to the noise of Gary puking in the bathroom. I got out of bed and went to assist him in the bathroom. When I walked in, he was completely nude and curled into a ball, rambling. This place is not right, or something to that effect. I decided to call 911, thinking he was an LSD or something along those lines. The next morning, I visited him in the hospital. I asked him what had happened to him. He told me the doctors found no cause of extreme vomiting or delusions. In fact, the EMTs told him he started coming to reality shortly before arriving to the hospital. Gary also told me from the moment he entered the house, he began to feel very strange, and that he kept getting grotesque and disturbing thoughts and images in his head and felt a heavy presence lurking over him. Needless to say, he refused to return to the house. This incident deeply disturbed me. I lived in the house for 6 more months, living with unexplained noises and things being moved to weird places before I finally got fed up with whatever was in the house. I sold the house and moved out within a month. To this day, when I drive by the home, I get a sinking feeling in my gut. And I just want to run for my life. When coyote howls. When I was about 25, I became a divorced mother of two young girls and took a job at El Coyote in Netcong, New Jersey. It's a bright pink building with a long history. Before Coyote, it was two restaurants, Club 21 and Nellie Burke's. When I started working there, no one ever mentioned anything to me about the strange things that would happen there. No one told me about the voices and the shadows, and that when your hair stood straight up on your arms when you went downstairs was a common occurrence. I think they were waiting for me to tell them. My very first experience was the knocking on the window. We had closed up for the night, and I was going to meet other employees for an after-work drink. I was the last one out, parked down in the back of the ramp. The kitchen was right above me. I unlocked the car and heard the pounding on the windows. I looked up. The kitchen was pitch black. I felt the hair on the back of my neck prickle, and my hands shook with my keys. Three more hard raps on the window, and I couldn't bring myself to look up again. I beelined for the bar where we were all meeting at. When I arrived, Brenda looked at me and asked if I was okay. Apparently, I was very pale and had a hard time describing what had just happened. When I told her and the others, just smiled and said, "Coyote ghosts make contact?" Of course, I was intrigued, scared, yet curious. I started talking to Bill, the head bartender. There were many nights he stayed after closing and heard only noises in the beginning. He heard silverware jingling by table 40. He saw shadows moving through the dining area and would investigate, finding no one. Soon after, he told me of the manifestation. He was cleaning up, catching some TV when he heard the front door click. You can't see the front door from the bar, but when people come in, you can see their shadows on the one entryway wall because of the chandelier in the lobby. He walked to the lobby and found not a soul. He walked to the dining room once, thinking they went inside, but again it was darkness. He walked back toward the front door, only to see the form of a man. He was middle-aged, wearing a white and black striped sweater with a closely cropped beard. He told me that upon seeing the dude, he screamed like a little girl. Big burly biker Bill screamed. I had to laugh. Sometimes when I work, I hear my name being called. Easy enough in a place where you worked for the last 13 years. But when no one is really calling you, that's when you feel it. Your customers don't want you. Your co-workers didn't either. That's a freak out. It's just not me. It's all of us. The voice could be male or female and knows each and all of us because the staff has been here forever. The poor bus kids won't go downstairs alone. My nephew, who I suspect may be gifted on his mom's side, has seen the same shadow I have, casually leaning in a doorway downstairs, observing us getting supplies. He quit. We just didn't help. I don't like tangling with them anyway. We decided to call in researchers. Ironically, before they came, the relatives of the previous owners came in. Lynn was their waitress and told her the craziest story. Downstairs used to be a bar, as well as the one upstairs. When her grandpa would close Nellie's, he would call the cops at least twice a month, swearing there were people hiding downstairs. Bar stools could be heard moving around. Bottles would clank, but when the old man came down, it would stop. A paranormal team came in a few months later. Activity was low, but the second time they returned, there was a lot more. A few entities occupied the building. They were able to capture some evidence, but unfortunately, the owner died. New owners bought it, but eventually, a few years later, it closed down. And I've always asked myself, who is the ghost or ghosts that haunt what used to be this restaurant? Some say there was a waitress, but it could be anybody, since this place had been around since 1931. Voices from another century. When I was a child, we lived in a most unusual haunted house, built in the old log cabin style, but larger, more like the Ponderosa. The house was at least 100 years old. The upstairs and downstairs had been converted into separate apartments. We lived downstairs while an elderly lady lived upstairs. The house was situated on the outskirts of Atlanta on several acres, nestled away from the main roads where traffic flowed. Although electricity, running water, and other modern conveniences had been added, even as a toddler I recognized the vestiges of a bygone era. Rusty plows and other farm implements laid idle in overgrown fields. Ashen sheds, barns, and other outbuildings still housed the remnants of harnesses, plows, pitchforks, and other tools for farming, hunting, and trapping. What remained of the flexible, two-handled saws they used were only the half-eaten blades that time had devoured. Broken cast-iron pots and shards of pottery lay half-buried under the earth alongside the large lye vat which had been used for making soap. A dirt lane meandered around the premises into the woods, where small dilapidated houses stood crumbling. Only one was occupied by a strange man, a bit of a recluse, as was Miss O'Kelly, our neighbor in the house. He would disappear into the medley of strange sounds and people that was the backdrop of an already haunted world that I had been born into. In my youth, I never understood there were ghosts, not real people like Miss Kelly or the man that lived in the woods. Let me explain. It was not a case where only one specially sensitive individual or clairaudient could hear the sounds. Everyone heard them. Our ghosts were toilers that worked from sunup to sundown. The matriarch of the family that we dubbed Granny was not that old by today's standards, judging from her labor. She was the first and the last to rise and go to bed, playing out the same drama endlessly that began with a morning wake-up call. Granny ascended the stairs, clapped her hands, and barked at the men, presumably her sons and husband. "Get up! Get up!" Most of what they said sounded like gibberish, and the accent was strange. The thud of feet could be heard hitting the floor, as well as their descent down the stairs. Granny could be heard in the kitchen clacking the dishes and silverware as she prepared the morning meal. The men always exited through the side door in the kitchen to harness the snorting horses with chains to continue plowing the fields. Other sounds emanated from the house. The thump-thumping of Granny churning butter in the kitchen, and later the rhythmic foot-tapping on the floor of what we imagined to be a spinning wheel. Though no one ever saw a visual manifestation, to my knowledge, they had very definite roles that were easily recognized. The buckboard wagons creaked as the wheels turned and drowned out with distance, later returning with louder sounds as they approached the house. Throughout the day, the sounds of hammering, sawing, and other work-related noises could be heard. Upon entering a room, the noise would suddenly stop, only to start back up again the minute you left. If you entered their work area outside, the noises would also cease temporarily, only to resume as soon as you left. For that reason, I assumed they were real people that were just around the corner, in another room, outside, or on or about the premises working. At about this time, my grandmother became seriously ill, and we began spending weekends away from home. Upon returning, our neighbor, Miss Kelly, said there was a whole gang of them downstairs just jibber-jabbering away. Our household ghosts had company with all the noises associated with a get-together of family and friends. No one could understand them, except for the morning wake-up call of, "Get up! Get up!" That was close enough to "get up, get up." And with the accompanying sounds, there was no mistaking those words. Miss O'Kelly said when we weren't there, they'd carry on all night. She didn't think she'd ever get any sleep and was always glad when we came back. I asked my mother what she did when we first moved in and discovered the place was haunted, to which she calmly replied, "Oh, we knew it was haunted when we moved in. The Wilsons had lived there before us, and they told us about it, but they said the ghosts wouldn't hurt you." Her only complaint had been that she thought she'd never get any sleep amidst the incessant noises that would often go on all night. Other strange events she recalled, one that I vaguely recall, were the lanterns that floated through the woods at night at about the same level they would be if a human held them. She didn't know what to make of the events at the time, but in later years my family and I had many discussions regarding the ghostly manifestations. My mother and I decided to go in search of the haunted escaped after some 40 years. As we were driving there, I asked her if she thought they were still there, to which she said, "Oh no. You know, as soon as they tore the house down, they all left." Interesting, though, I had been a child when I last lived there, and as we neared the locale, I felt it and exclaimed to my mother, "We're close. I can feel it." She responded, "So can I." Though a mall and a newer homes had been constructed at the site, something of the energy remained. We heard nothing, nor did we see anything out of the ordinary. But there at Ground Zero, we could still feel their presence. The USS Blue. While stationed at Oxnard, California, on the naval station there, I had the opportunity to go aboard several ships that were being decommissioned and taken to sea to be sunk by missile tests. Along with two other Swabbies, we all headed over to the area where the ships were tied. We went on board the group there. The ship in the middle was an old World War II destroyer named Blue, USS Blue, which was tied up alongside several other tin cans waiting to be hauled out and sunk. Porterfield was another, sort of sad. I was on them to acquire a few items. One was the executive officer safe from his stateroom. It was a very, very hot day, and down in the guts of a dead ship, it can get very, very hot, well over 100 degrees. We were all in the officer's quarters area of the ship, the USS Blue, when one of the guys picked up a Chinese coin from the deck after we had helped him move out the standing drawer of the unit there, also finding some World War II cigarettes and a temporary commission for an officer during the Vietnam crapola. We were all sweating. It was so darn hot when all of a sudden there was a movement of air. Then so cold we all got the goosebumps. Thinking something was strange, we moved into another part of the ship. Hot, hot. One of the guys said, "Let's go back in there." So we all did, and again, very, very cold. And some strange sounds like a whisper. We left. We went over to another ship, and it was hot, really hot. No cold spots at all. One of the guys said he had felt something touch him shortly after picking up the Chinese coin. No doubt, something was there, trying to get a point across. Since it was a World War II ship, I'm thinking either someone was killed aboard her, or maybe it was the coin. I'll never know. USS Blue is at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean now. The Old Stone House. While living in the state of Maine, my two sons and I headed up the road to look in on an old apple orchard to shoot a deer. Outside the orchard was an old stone home. Across from it was a fallen down barn. The boys and I walked over to the old barn. There was some snow on the ground, not a whole lot. As we got directly across from the driveway of the house, we could see the trees out back. Behind the trees was a large pond. Something caught my eye in the side window of the house. It was a large woman in an apron, leaning on a table there and smiling at us. I told the boys we should go and ask her if it was all right to cut through her yard to go behind and into the orchard. We walked across the street and knocked on the door, noticing immediately that there was no furniture in the house. I walked around to the side window. There was an old table there in front of the window, all dusty, with no hand marks, where the woman had been leaning. Also, no footprints around the house in the snow. We saw her for quite some time before crossing the dirt road. She was there, but not a real person at all. She was a real ghost. We later learned that the house was empty because of this woman who had haunted it for many years. The house had been torn down, and no one ever lived in it. It was in Fryeburg, Maine. There was a very, very haunted house near Bridgeton, Maine, about 8 miles from this one. The owner offered $100 to anyone who could spend the night in it. No one ever did while I lived up there. Strange, but true.